This hour of the Jason Rancho brought to you by the Ben Shapiro Show. Heard weeknights from 6 to 9 right here on KTTH. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Media bias.
Now, I did not intend to cover this story at the start of the 3 p.m. hour, because when we get news about the Hunter Biden scandal, the truth of the matter is I'm personally not all that interested, and I don't think your average voter is going to be swayed by any of this. Even if it's a bad look, what's alleged between Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, and Burisma in Ukraine. I understand that it can be certainly compelling if you approach it in a certain way. I just don't think that the average voter is going to look at the scandal just with Hunter Biden and be moved to change their vote. I do think that the lying on behalf of Joe Biden is an issue, but I just don't think it's going to change people's minds. Okay? However, we're now leading with it because it's not just about a New York Post story with some bombshell evidence that could implicate Joe Biden in this scandal. It's a story now about big tech, specifically Twitter and Facebook, openly, brazenly censoring content, limiting content, because they simply didn't agree with it. Why didn't they agree with it? Why did they not want you to see it? Because it could hurt Joe Biden's campaign. That's what they believe. That's certainly what a lot of Republicans believe. Twitter and Facebook, they're not hiding what it is they're doing here. So the New York Post published a great editorial by me the other week. We don't have to talk about that. But they published a story today, a bombshell report, that prints an alleged email showing proof that Hunter Biden and Joe Biden were actually engaged in what seems like some dirty dealings. Joe Biden had said he had never spoken to his son about any overseas dealings. He never got him any help. He did absolutely nothing ever, period.
Well, I have never discussed with my son or my brother or anyone else anything having to do with their businesses, period.
He's said that multiple times. He got mad at that one dude, I believe in Iowa, yelling at the voter for calling him out on doing something illicit on behalf of his son to get him a job. But now we've got an email. We've got an email printed in the New York Post, supposedly from Vadim Pozharsky, who is an advisor to the board of Burisma. An email that he allegedly sent to Hunter that says, "Dear Hunter, thank you for inviting me to DC and giving me an opportunity to meet your father and spend some time together. It's really an honor and pleasure." But we were told Joe Biden didn't do any of that. He said it over and over and over again. Now, this on top of an email from May of 2014 that shows the same guy, Pozharsky, asking Hunter for, quote, advice on how you could use your influence, end quote, on behalf of Burisma. Now, this email comes from a laptop, we're told by the New York Post, that apparently was dropped off at a repair shop in Delaware that was never actually picked up afterwards. They believe that it belongs to Hunter Biden. Now, on this laptop, there was apparently also a pornographic video involving Hunter Biden and images of him smoking crack. And we, of course, know that Hunter Biden, he's been open about his addiction history. Now, this laptop and hard drive ended up getting turned over to the FBI. There is now a Senate investigation into this information. And here we are. When you post this to Twitter, Twitter says, no, sorry, we're not going to allow you to post it. I've got video of myself trying to post this on Twitter and it giving me an error sign. Facebook came out via a communications representative for Facebook, who is a lifelong Democratic staffer, formerly of Cory Booker and others, saying that on Facebook, anyone who posts it, they're going to make sure that it does not spread as they wait for a third-party fact checker. Now, is some of what's in this report sketchy? Yeah, totally. There's some stuff in here that I don't trust on face value. Not now, not yet. However, that should not matter. Joe Biden, earlier today, didn't deny the meeting took place. Instead, the campaign put out a what the New York Post is calling a carefully worded statement that said there were no meetings on his official schedule in 2015 that has this guy's name on it. What about the unofficial calendar that a lot of people keep? What about that one? So that's number one. Number two, I believe that you guys can make up your own mind by reading this story the way I read this story, with a critical eye, an open mind, and make up your own mind. Twitter, nor Facebook, nor any social media company should be in a position where they're telling you something is or is not legitimate enough for you to even read. This is not some random blog. This is the New York Post. You don't have to like the New York Post, but that is a mainstream organization. If you all of a sudden are going to tell us that because there's some sketchy stuff that hasn't been corroborated by a third party, okay. Now, if that's your standard, why is it that I can find a whole bunch of Steele dossier articles up on Twitter, which has been completely shown to be nonsense? Why is it that right now I can find stories from people who follow the Daily Stormer, the white supremacist website? Why is it that on Facebook there's talk about the P-tape from the Steele dossier with Donald Trump, which we know is fake? Because in those cases, you're not concerned about hurting Donald Trump. But Twitter and Facebook, they are concerned about hurting Joe Biden. This is how big tech controls the narrative, interferes with an election. How ironic that we've been having the conversation about Russian interference, which they did interfere and is serious. And yet when we have interference right here at home coming from Silicon Valley, no concern expressed from the Democrats. And because I want to be fair, only concern coming from Republicans who don't end up doing anything. They talk about it. Senator Hawley, for example, talks about it. He's on Tucker Carlson a lot talking about it. Ted Cruz talks about it. Lindsey Graham talks about it. You going to do anything? Like, can you come up with a solution instead of just talking a lot about it? That would be very helpful. Now, as a conservative, I want to be very careful about introducing regulations on any company, certainly a company that traffics in expression. I think you got to be very, very careful. However, Twitter and Facebook and websites in general, they benefit from some laws that give them protection when they post things that are clearly false, that they do nothing about when it's against Trump. If you're going to do that and you're going to be that leader in the national conversation or international conversation, then you don't get to just pick and choose the winners and losers. That's not how it should work. Now, what does legislation look like to correct that? I don't know. But I sure hear from a lot of Republicans who talk about it. How about this? Give me a solution, and then we can talk about it. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, Amy Coney Barrett, another marathon day answering questions from bad faith politicians and cheerleader politicians. Will play for you some of the highlights. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants. twitter.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
Another day, another bunch of questions that should not have been asked of Amy Coney Barrett, who will be the next Supreme Court justice. Short of something just insane happening, some crazy revelation, she is going to be the next Supreme Court justice. And she's done nothing over the course of the last couple days, or 3 days if you're counting today. Not only has she not said anything that would disqualify her, she very clearly has the experience and the intellect, the qualifications to serve on the Supreme Court. What we've been seeing over the course of the last couple days is nothing but politics. Some of it to try to hurt Amy Coney Barrett, which won't work. In fact, we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show. The polling indicates even Democrats are starting to really like her. But when they're not going after her, they're just getting all political and making this about Obamacare. Here's Senator Lindsey Graham.
Let's talk a little bit about yesterday, Obamacare.
He kind of slurred there at the beginning. Did you hear that? It's like he's tired.
Let's talk a little bit about.
These are long days.
Yeah, I mean, this was in the morning, though.
Morning?
Maybe he woke up at 4.
Mornings can be long.
Like I did. Ugh. It was a little lovable. Let's talk about Amy Hall.
Let's talk a little bit about yesterday, Obamacare. This hearing has been more about Obamacare than it has you. Obamacare is on the ballot. If you want socialized, single-payer health care, that's on the ballot. Why do many of us object to Obamacare? It was written and passed on a partisan line, I think on Christmas Eve. Most big changes in society have more buy-in than that. You're talking about one-fifth of the American economy. And as I said yesterday, from a South Carolina point of view, this has not worked out well. We started with 5 exchanges. We're down to 1. You have 1 choice.
Yep. It's not a good system. It's financially untenable. But it was funny because after Lindsey Graham makes that point, you then go to Senator Amy Klobuchar, who was trying to figure out what Amy Coney Barrett knew about the president's position on Obamacare and when she knew it. And the implication was that the only reason she was picked was because she was going to listen to the president exclusively before she decides on cases.
He has said things like, he wants to immediately repeal and replace the disaster known as Obamacare. He has said that he wants to get rid of it. He has said in States of the Union, I am calling on Congress to repeal it. He said, can you believe that Mitch McConnell, who has screamed repeal and replace for 7 years, couldn't get it done? So there have literally been hundreds of statements by him, by my colleagues, and I just find it hard to understand that you were not aware of the president's statements.
I am aware that the president opposes the Affordable Care Act. I'm aware that he has criticized the Affordable Care Act. I took Senator Harris's question yesterday to be referring to the specific tweet, maybe the one that you have behind you, about how he wanted to put a justice on the court to replace Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely aware of that tweet now. And as I said to Senator Harris yesterday, it came up in some of my calls with Democratic senators, brought it up. But I honestly can't remember whether I knew about it before I was nominated or not. I'm not sure.
I love how we're pretending that this is some kind of scandal, that she might have lied. She actually saw a tweet but lied about it. Why would she do that? Did you know, Peyton, when Amy Klobuchar just made all those random quotes, did you know those quotes specifically, word for word, were made by Trump?
No.
No. I heard maybe one of them before. And I do this for a living. You do this for a living. This is what we do. Did you know that Donald Trump was against Obamacare?
Yeah.
Yeah, so did I. Yet in this world, Amy Klobuchar doesn't think it's possible, I guess, to be aware of a position, but also not be aware of a specific tweet or a specific statement. That's the scandal. Oh my gosh, how will ACB be able to overcome this? I don't think she will. And again, of course, Klobuchar doing what the Democrats are doing, which is try to get Amy Coney Barrett to speak specifically to how she would rule on specific issues, which you're not supposed to do in this forum.
As I said before, I'm aware that the president opposes the Affordable Care Act.
Well, I know you're aware now, but were you aware back then?
Well, seems
when you were nominated.
Well, Senator Klobuchar, I think that the Republicans have kind of made that clear. It's just been part of the public discourse.
Okay, but is the answer yes?
Senator Klobuchar, all these questions, you're suggesting that I have animus or that I cut a deal with the president.
So I'm glad she pushed back. This whole idea was like, oh, well, if you knew before you were the nominee that President Trump was against Obamacare, she will argue it means he's only picking you because you're going to vote against Obamacare. You had some kind of conversation or agreement, to which she has said many times under oath, doesn't exist. This is a really, really, really lame attack. It just is. But it's what you get when you've got a candidate who really is qualified and doesn't have the shady background that you wish they had. You get this kind of lazy attack. Now, I also saw some tweets angry at Lindsey Graham for the way he phrased a time where this country dealt with segregation. Now, I'm assuming that it was joking or it was over the top on purpose, that it was being said with exaggeration and not actually saying, I wish we went back to the days of segregation, but let's actually listen.
And one of the reasons you can't tell us how you would rule is because there's active litigation coming to the court. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And one of the reasons you can say with confidence that you think Brown versus Board of Education super precedent is that you're not aware of any effort to go back to the good old days of segregation by a legislative body. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Are we going to pretend he was literally saying good old days and not talking about it in a sarcastic way, given the context in which he just said it?
Democrats will.
Okay, again, going to producer Peyton for just a moment. When you hear that people are pretending to be outraged by that, I'm honestly interested. What goes through your head?
It's ridiculous. It's obvious sarcasm. I don't think he needs to explain his sarcasm in that sort of situation.
No, it's just people are dumb. People are dumb.
So many. So
Twitter has made us all stupid. I mean, not me, because I'm a genius, but everybody else has made everybody stupid.
Is it Twitter's fault?
Yeah.
I don't blame Twitter.
Twitter, people's habits on Twitter, how about that? Because there are probably plenty of people who saw the headline or what was trending, didn't even listen to the video, or the people who watched the video, bad faith, pretending that he meant literally good old. Oh, you guys are the worst. I hate everything. Put on the list of things I hate just everything.
Everything?
Put it underlined in the
couple. Is this the last day that I have to write in this? Or
no, it's some I'm going to get more specific.
Okay.
But just for now, just put everything on the book of things I hate. One day we're going to publish it. But you know why I'm not going to do it right now? Because I hate publishing.
That falls in line with everything.
1-800-465-8770. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text message. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We're live on this Wednesday afternoon. Earlier this morning, Fox Business printed an editorial that I wrote, and I want to be humble about this. It's the best editorial they've ever published.
And very humble.
It's titled, "Seattle's Once Booming Economy Will Soon Be Demolished by City's Tax-Addicted Progressives." And it's essentially an analysis of why the writing is very clearly on the wall as to the economic future of the city of Seattle. And I take the audience brilliantly through this increase in taxes that we've seen, this culture of being addicted to taxes here in Seattle. I talk about the uptick in violence and homelessness and why it's creating a system in which businesses can't really survive, especially at a time where we've got a pandemic going on. No more than maybe 2, maybe 3.5 hours later, I see a story yet again of another Seattle business in downtown calling it quits, shutting their business there down. This time it's Jean Juarez Spa's flagship store in downtown. They're closing. They've got other places. So the people, hopefully, who lose their jobs in downtown will be able to be put in other shops across Seattle. But the one in downtown is closing. Now, they didn't actually explain why. They just confirmed to Como TV that they were, in fact, closing. But I do think we can use just some basic common sense here to figure out why this happened. Because it's not like this is an anomaly. This isn't just the exception. Everybody else is doing really, really well. Business is booming. People are banging down doors to get into some property in downtown Seattle. We know what's been happening. In this case, we've got pandemic mandates keeping people out of stores. You've got out-of-control homelessness and crime. You've got riots that directly impacted this business. And you've got tax increases. You put it all together, and it equals probably needing to close down your business. Now, UW professor Jacob Vigdor, who's a professor over there of public policy and governance, he spoke to Como TV, said he's not shocked.
The pandemic, the unrest, the protests that we've seen, it is a really challenging environment for business. Yeah. And it's going to take a lot of money in the bank for those businesses that really want to survive.
Yeah. And you know what sucks about this? They've been in that location for 22 years. 22 years. This comes on the heels of Elephant Car Wash closing down, specifically citing the business taxes and the burdensome regulation on top of all the criminality and homelessness. You have Bartels, this business has been dealing with the effects of prolific criminals to the point where they had to close down their Pioneer Square location because it just kept getting broken into. Because we live in a city in which the police aren't allowed to do their jobs. They sold their business, been here for 132 years. They sold it to Rite Aid, which is based out of, I believe, Pennsylvania. You've got Amazon that's moving jobs out of the city of Seattle. Why do you think this is happening? The council doesn't seem to care all that much. If they do, they're not sharing their feelings. They're pretending that this isn't that big of a deal. None of this is really happening in a way that terrifies them about the future of this city. Which tells you that maybe part of the plan is to run these businesses out of town. That's the way they act. Anytime, for example, Amazon makes an announcement, they're like, oh, it's just a few thousand. They still have 60,000 plus people here. It's not going to be 60,000 plus people working in South Lake Union for much longer. We already know that that number is less several thousand because of the moves being made to Bellevue. But this council doesn't care. The mayor every once in a while says something but doesn't seem all that passionate about it, while at the same time, they're still spending like crazy, which means at some point where you can't collect the taxes from these businesses, you're going to have to yet again raise taxes on Seattle voters, Seattle constituents. But it's not just an issue in Seattle, because did you know that the King County Council just increased your sales tax? We actually talked about it 2 days ago. City of Renton decided to increase their sales tax. They did it before the county council. And I said at that point, I think it was on Monday, I said, county council is going to do this. They're going to try to sneak this in. And that's exactly what they did. Very little notice, which meant none of you really had a say. The council, in a vote of 8-1, voted to impose a 0.1% sales tax. The only council member to say no was Reagan Dunn, who's going to be on the show at 5:30. Now, the money that they raise will go into buying old hotels so that we can put homeless people in them. Now, as far as I can tell, there's not actually a plan in mind beyond just finding hotels that are cheap and throwing homeless people in them. Not addressing the underlying causes, not telling us exactly what success would look like beyond a very simple, oh, you're homeless because you don't have a home. Let's just put you in a home. And then we'll declare victory. Seeming to forget that these people weren't born homeless. They became homeless for a reason. There is an underlying cause. Some of it has to do with just bad luck, losing a job, getting behind, and finding themselves in a hole they can't dig themselves out of. Other people, mental health issues, drug addictions, alcoholism. Every one of those underlying causes requires a different approach. But the one thing we know doesn't work in addressing the underlying causes is simply saying, oh, here's a hotel room for free. Have fun, have at it. We'll just continue to pay and pay and pay large amounts of money, not only to buy up this land, but also to house people in it. And what ends up happening is Seattle homeless. Remember, what do we say on the show? Bad policies of Seattle tend to spread. Homelessness also tends to spread. The people who live in Seattle who are homeless will be displaced out of Seattle throughout King County into these hotels. It's what's happening right now in the city of Renton with the Red Lion Hotel, shipping out a whole bunch of homeless people to live there. What do you think is going to happen when people catch wind of this? Because we already know that there are large amounts of homeless people, according to a King County study, who weren't even from King County, who came here. They came here because of our lax rules. What do you think is going to happen when some homeless person in Portland, who's been able to kind of do whatever they want there, it's much like Seattle, but then they hear, hey, in Seattle, they'll put you up in a hotel room forever. They're going to come here. They're going to come here. But apparently, according to Dave Updegrove, who is a King County Council member, he says everyone likes this plan.
No expensive construction, no delays, no bureaucracy. What we're doing is what the public has been clamoring for.
The public has not been clamoring for this, because I don't remember the public having any say in this. Have we had a community-wide debate on this issue? Did I miss it? I know activists want this. I know folks like Dave Updegrove like to pretend that activists are the community, but they're not. They're a small vocal minority of the community. Jean Cole Wells, another King County Council member, she wanted to rush because we can get a really good deal on the property.
Reality is the sales price for hotels is very deflated right now.
It's very deflated, but do you have a plan to actually make that money back, or do you just see a plan? Is this the equivalent of going on Amazon, because today is Prime Day, and you see a whole bunch of stuff you don't really need, but you're all like, well, that That stereo system, that Bluetooth speaker, I mean, I already have 12.
Those lightning deals, they'll get you.
It used to be $199, but now it's $134. I mean, that's kind of a deal. I mean, I could save the $134 and actually do something good with it. But let me get a 13th Bluetooth speaker. Is that how this works? It's ridiculous to me that this is how they're doing it. Now, an interesting argument is coming from the conservative who voted in favor of this, friend of the show, Kathy Lambert.
Talking to tourism people, they are also concerned because when tourism gets better, they will not have the hotels.
So essentially, it's like a bailout for the hotel industry? Is that how it works? Because we're buying the property. I don't like this. You shouldn't like this. And most importantly, you should be upset that you were not consulted on this. Folks like Dave Updegrove and Gene Cole Wells, they only care what you think about if you happen to agree with them. They're not seeking out opposition. They're seeking people to back their plan. And when you live in an echo chamber, as both of those council members do, you end up only hearing from one side. The community has been clamoring for this? Really? Could you back that statement up at all? Oh, no, you won't come on this show. You might get yelled at. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-8770. To the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. There are independent bookstores around the country who are upset with Amazon, so they connected with an advertising agency to attack Amazon. This coincides with Amazon Prime Day, which is weird because it's 2 days and they don't call it Prime Days. They say Prime Day on their website. I don't get it.
Why are you so nitpicky?
Just saying.
It's such a wonderful day where they can send me anything I want for 75% off.
It's a wonderful day unless you are a member of the American Booksellers Association, because they argue this is a horrible day. In fact, Amazon is putting them out of business. And so they launched this new advertising campaign called Boxed Out. And so some of these bookstores across the country are putting up boarded windows that aren't really boarded windows, but it looks like they're boarded up windows. And it's got a bunch of different messages on them that are supposed to relay to the person walking by, we are closed because of Amazon. They pushed us out, and you're supposed to have an emotional response like, oh, that sucks. I used to always love to go to that bookstore.
How many times did you go in the last year?
Yeah, never.
2 years. 3 years. Never.
12, yeah. So some of the language on there is, don't accept Amazon's Brave New World. And then it also says, books curated by real people, not a creepy algorithm. The problem is, those real people who will annoy me with small talk the second I step foot into their store, they don't know me. But the creepy algorithm does. The algorithm knows the types of books, or for Amazon's purposes, not just books, products in general, that I'm interested in. And that creepy algorithm saves me time. I like the creepy algorithm. I also used to like, and still do like, going into a bookstore and just wandering the shelves and seeing what's out.
And then going and buying it on Amazon?
Well, you skipped a step. I take a photo of the book on my phone and then buy it on Amazon once I get home, because I do feel kind of judged when I do it in the Barnes & Noble. The fact of the matter is, Amazon is just way cheaper. And even before a pandemic economy, a consumer who is choosing between a book that they can buy in the store for $32.99 versus the book they can buy at Amazon for $18.99, they will wait the 1 or 2 days to get that book sent by Amazon because they're saving so much money. I get the struggles of an independent bookstore, but the problem is they have decided not to evolve their business model. They have made the choice to not try to compete with Amazon. It is so easy and it is so lazy to go after Amazon because it's successful. Instead of asking yourselves in this industry, hey, what can we do to separate ourselves from Amazon? Amazon, for example, you can pretty much get anything and it will super serve you based on your browsing habits. Okay. So what can you do in a world to compete with that? You can become a very niche-based bookstore, right? There's a bookstore, I think it's in West Seattle, where it's just cookbooks. That's all it is. Now, if you're someone who's a home chef, or you want to be, that might be more appealing than going to Amazon, right? So long as it's reasonably priced. You have to figure that out. And if you can't, here's the truth. And I know some people don't like to hear this. Your business may no longer be viable. And as much as that sucks, if you're a business owner, as much as it sucks, if you're a customer who doesn't want to see a business go out, sometimes businesses are no longer viable. Sometimes it has gone through its natural life cycle as a business, and it needs to go away. I'm sure there used to be a pencil store. No one uses pencils anymore. So that store goes out of business. That's why you diversify. That's why you start to sell pens and markers and big crayons for liberals to write letters to the editors with. See what I did? Because big crayons?
I got you. That's a good one.
I thought that was kind
of
good.
So now do a book one. Make a book joke because this whole segment was about bookstores.
I've decided to just close the chapter in this segment and move on because we're about to hit the top of the hour.
Impressive.
Break. That was really good. It's the Jason Rance Show.